Hello and welcome to Truth in Journalism, a radio broadcast dedicated to applying the Word of God to current events. Well, today on Truth in Journalism, we're going to talk about movies. So, you've probably heard about, if you haven't seen, the movie The Sound of Freedom, starring Jim Caviezel. It's a film that is very loosely based on a true story about Tim Ballard, a former Homeland Security agent who has formed an agency attempting to rescue children from human trafficking. I haven't had the time to see it. I get to the movies about once a year at most nowadays, but Sound of Freedom looks interesting. More than that, it's about a topic that's important, and I've always liked Caviezel, though he does tend to play characters a little over-serious for my taste, but he's still very good. Now, I expected a movie with Caviezel, especially about child trafficking, and with Angel Studios backing it, to do pretty well. It's a summer movie, and there are a lot of Christians with disposable income, and considering the popularity and success of The Chosen, I would have been surprised if this movie didn't turn out to be very profitable. It only cost $15 million to make. I also expected to hear nasty and unfounded criticism from the left. So far, no one has disappointed me. The movie has performed well, being number three in the country as of right now, and the critics on the left have been exceedingly nasty and mean-spirited. I'll grant, I haven't seen the movie, so I won't weigh in on its quality. My guess, from reading a broad spectrum of reviews, is that it's probably an okay movie. Not terrible, not great. That probably gets a little preachy and probably could have been improved with a bigger budget and probably takes too many liberties with the whole based on a true story thing. But it's probably a movie that makes people feel good and inspires them to do something and entertains them for a couple of hours. My guess is that it's an okay movie that could have been better and certainly could have been worse. And I won't weigh in today on the unhinged criticism coming after this movie. Other commentators like Christian Toto have done a wonderful and thorough job of that. Rather, what I want to focus on is a criticism against the film from Nick Allen of RogerEbert.com. He says this, "The story is true, but it barely comes to life with such a telling, which is a shame. Not just because it's uncomfortable to be numbed by these themes, but also because director Alejandro Monteverde well clears the low bar for filmmaking one expects from movies that are message first and often come with similar faith-driven backers. Take away the noise surrounding it, and Sound of Freedom has distinct cinematic ambitions, a non-graphic horror film with what could be called an arthouse sensibility for muted rage and precise, striking shadows derived from an already bleak world. If Sound of Freedom were less concerned with being something important, it could be more than a mood. It could be a movie." Now, I'm pretty good at reading, and that paragraph was admittedly a doozy. But in short, what Allen is saying is that Sound of Freedom could have been a lot better if it hadn't tried too hard to be an important movie and had tried a lot harder to make sure that its story was more important than the message that it was conveying. Now, this may upset you. You may think that the message against child trafficking is so important that it warrants a message-first approach. You may think that it's okay for narrative to be message-first, that putting the point front and center doesn't detract from the quality of the storytelling. But let's investigate that claim, shall we? Does centering the message lower story quality? And indeed, a more important question is whether it's even possible to write good or even great fiction without it having a message or a moral. Because the reality is that this is a pretty relevant issue for today. We have an awful lot of fiction with a message. In fact, almost everything in media is very message-focused. As we know, the people at Disney have a not-at-all-secret gay agenda. We know that the woke Hollywood and big tech media outlets have been on a blackwashing spree where they have done their level best to erase straight white male characters whenever possible, unless they need a villain, an incompetent simp, a goon, or someone to take pratfalls whenever the plot needs them to. Look at the recent Disney offerings based upon Lucasfilm content. Disney has gotten rid of strong male protagonists like Luke Skywalker and Indiana Jones and replaced them with Mary Sue girl bosses like Rey Palpatine and Helena Shaw, all the while making Luke a frustrated, incompetent moral failure and Indiana Jones a useless old codger who is only in his namesake film because the eponymous hero needs to pass the bullwhip to the smarter, tougher, better female version. These are messages. the need for Amazon to invent characters for Rings of Power and to add black characters was because, as we were told over and over and over again, television needs to reflect the world we live in today. Even when the televised world is a high fantasy fiction with imaginary races set in the ancient past. I could go on and on about the whole woke messaging in modern media, but chances are you've noticed. Chances are you've already gotten sick of it. That's especially true if the box office and streaming stats are anything to base anything on anyways. And of course, it's possible you've noticed that movies and television have been exceptionally terrible lately, even if you haven't been able to put your finger on why. The reason is the message. The message comes first, and it comes loudly, and it comes in many forms. From casting to plot to dialogue and just about everything else, there is a message that woke media is presenting, and it is in every aspect of just about every media production. But here's the thing. From the perspective of the woke media moguls, all of their material has a message too. For the woman at Disney who talks about her not at all secret gay agenda, all those hundreds and thousands of Disney characters who weren't gay were presenting a message too. Every time there's a movie where the protagonist is part of a traditional family, that movie is promoting the message that traditional families are normal, good, and desirable. You see, friends, once upon a time, a lot of people lived in a world where they presupposed that some things weren't political, that some things simply were, and that they didn't contain an underlying moral message. And as we have entered into postmodernism, that idea has been exploded. And that's fair enough, because it wasn't true. Whenever a fiction writer writes fiction, he creates an invented world, and that world can be whatever he so chooses. And it can have any rules. There's no such thing as a fiction story set in the real world. It's simply a fictional story set in a world that is extremely similar to our world, but it's not set in the real world. In a fictional version of the world, that's where it's set. And if you create a world where two parents raise happy children, you're sending a message that two parents can raise happy children. And if you present nothing but images of happy children coming from two-parent households, then you're suggesting something about the world, that children need two parents to be happy. You may not even believe that, but that's the message that's being conveyed. Fiction presents a world as it is in the world as it should be, because fiction is built on the protagonist's conflict between the world as it is and the world as it should be. Protagonists, or heroes, make the world, or at least they try to make the world, conform to their vision for how the world ought to be. And this ought is a moral claim. Fictional stories present a vision of the good, and that is a moral and even a theological claim. Luke Skywalker wants to create a world without the Empire. Indiana Jones wants to create a world where the Nazis don't get the Holy Grail. Frodo Baggins wants to create a world where the One Ring is destroyed in the fires of Mount Doom. These are all obvious, and they have obvious moral messages attached. Murderous empires are to be resisted. Nazis are bad. Tyranny should be stopped. But these stories, and I'm choosing these because they are all major parts of the American imagination, and they're stories that Hollywood is trying to change, but these stories have subtle messages attached to them as well. For instance, Luke Skywalker's relationship to Obi-Wan Kenobi communicates the message that heroes need older male mentors who can help them truly become heroes. Indiana Jones, similarly, must learn to recognize his father's wisdom and tread the path that his father couldn't. These are basic to mythology, but they resonate with us today. There is a part of us that accepts as fundamentally true the idea that heroes need older, wiser mentors to shape them into heroes. We accept that men must at some point take up their father's mantle and essentially replace their fathers. On a less serious note, Sam Gamgee in Lord of the Rings teaches us that a man needs to pluck up the courage and ask Rosie Cotton out on a date, a message that Hermione Granger explicitly tells Ron Weasley in Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. Stories that matter have formed the Western canon. Stories that resonate with us and that we know and love have presented an awful lot of morality and messaging. Heroes fight villains. Men should be brave. Women should be virtuous. Children should be protected. Heterosexuality is the norm. Friendship is to be cherished. Despair is destructive. Cowardice is evil. Pride comes before a fall. Men are to be strong and women are to be kind. The young prince slays the dragon and gets the girl. These are just some of the basic messages that Western society has embedded. and embedded so deeply that we don't even notice them in our stories. But the funny thing is that not everyone likes those messages. There are some people who think that rather than making heterosexuality the norm, we need to normalize perversion. And Hollywood did that. And it was incredibly effective. Will and Grace did more to change public opinion than any amount of preaching, teaching, or op-eds or anything else. Because the truth is that the stories we tell and the stories we believe shape us in ways that we can't even comprehend. And seeing the success of the homosexual agenda, the woke are going for broke and trying to change everything. And the thing is that they're not wrong. When those who are constantly whinging about representation say that it matters and that shows that only feature straight white male heroes are sending a message, they aren't wrong. The problem is that their transgressive message either presents a false anthropology or is presented in such an incompetent and ham-fisted way that nobody believes it. Look, I love a strong female character. Jane Austen is one of my favorite authors of all time. Lizzie Bennet is one of my favorite characters. But what Jane knew is that you can have a strong female heroine without making all the men look like trash. But the she-woman-man haters in Hollywood are often guilty of real misandry, and so they portray men as incompetent boobs, or they're just crappy writers, or they have to make the men weak and pathetic because they're presenting a false anthropology, and the only way to make it work is for the men to be awful. Case in point, Cate Blanchett does a world-class job as Galadriel in Peter Jackson's Lord of the Rings. Galadriel is powerful and terrifying, but not because she swings a sword or wears armor or manspreads when she sits. She is all woman, or all she-elf. But she presents the naked power of womanhood, the kind of mythical power of an unfallen Eve. She isn't going to beat you up, but her magical power and her deep knowledge are frightening, and you realize that while Galadriel is beautiful and kind, she is also someone who deserves the utmost respect. Compare her to the new version of Galadriel. She's a cruel, thuggish, rude, undersized Mary Sue girl boss who plays essentially the toxic male or the 80s movie rich kid villain. But it's okay, because she's a girl. And the only way this half-pint is able to get away with this is by making the men weak and stupid around her. People know this is a lie. People know that this is a false anthropology. Yes, there have been great women fighters in history. There have. And yes, there are women who can fight today, but the notion that this tiny blonde spaghetti-armed loudmouth is going to just command the awe and obedience of men who are significantly bigger and stronger than her is ludicrous. And that's not how men behave. And it's not how women behave. And the women who do act like that are the people that we all hate. Brothers and sisters, all fiction has a message. And the truth is that all fiction puts its message front and center. The difference is that some do it well and some do it poorly. And some present a message people believe and which resonates with them. And some present a message that rings false and that people don't believe and they reject. And sometimes it's not easy to understand what a story is teaching us. Not only with fiction, but even with true stories. Read the narratives of the Old Testament. What is the message of the story of Samson? What's the message of King Hezekiah? What about Esther? What about Bathsheba? Christians are people whose lives are entirely built upon and built around stories. True stories, to be sure, but stories all the same. Christians are mythological people, and we admit it. I mean, all people are people of myths, but some choose not to admit it. That's another story for another day. But we own up to the fact that stories make and shape us. And it's true that when it comes to making stories recently, Christians haven't always been the best. And there's much to criticize about a lot of Christian art and entertainment. Some of it's downright awful. But not because of the true messages that Christians believe. Christian film and television is often bad because of bad acting or bad writing and bad production values. But not because Christian messages are bad. If anything, it's the Christian values and messaging that have dragged Christian media along and allowed it to get better and better, not hindered it. Message-first stories will always be a part of Christian media. And that doesn't mean that it's doomed to be bad or second rate, but the good messages don't mean that there's nothing to criticize or that critics are in bad faith either. Christian film and television is growing up, and part of growing up is learning to take your lumps. Believers need to support high-quality Christian entertainment so that we can get our message out. But we've also got to learn to take criticism and accept that sometimes Christian art is bad and the media isn't persecuting us when they say so. Brothers and sisters, the message works. Let's work to make sure that the artwork works too. Let's keep the message central and strive to produce great art that will shape the souls of generations. I hope and pray we will, and I hope you'll join us again next time for another exciting episode of Truth in Journalism. Thank you, and may God bless your day to His glory.